Hi there, it's Nikki. I wanted to take a quick minute to make sure you knew about our free on-demand copywriting training. Whether you're brand new to copywriting or you just can't seem to hit your income goals, this training is for you. You'll learn the three secrets to landing freelance copywriting work without wasting time on frustrating job bidding sites like Upwork and Fiverr or cold calling strangers. And if you've listened to any of the student stories on this podcast, this is the exact same training they all got started with. I'm talking about KK, who's making six figures working part-time and who just retired her husband to help her run the business. Stuart, who replaced his full-time salary with freelance copywriting work and then some. Stacy, who hit six figures in 6 months, her very first year as a full-time freelancer. Ashley, who landed the in-house copywriting job of her dreams. They all started with this free training, and you can get started with that same training too. Sign up right now at freecopywritingtraining.com. Welcome to the Build Your Copywriting Business podcast, where you'll get tips, tools, and training for new and aspiring copywriters, plus a few things even the established pros will want to know. My name is Nikki Krawczyk, and I've been a copywriter for more than 15 years, writing for multi-billion dollar companies down to solopreneurs and every size business in between. The Filthy Rich Writer team and I are here to teach you everything we've learned in our years in the industry so that you can craft a successful copywriting career of your own. To us, being filthy rich means having a job you love, being good at what you do, and making great money doing it. Let's dig in. Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Build Your Copywriting Business podcast. Hello, Kate, and hello to our special guest, Peta O'Brien Day. How are you, ladies? Hello.
I'm good.
Yay. Kate and I are very excited to have Peta here today because she is an expert of sorts in a couple of topics that are going to be very useful for a lot of you guys. Number one, building a business while raising a family and all of the joys and complications that involves. And then also at the same time, staying productive when you have those especially limited hours. It's not just building a business part-time. There's also then cutting into that part-time hours, tiny people who need and deserve your attention. So Peta, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited.
We're excited to have you. So I guess just to start out, can you give us some background on your journey up to the, I hate that term, journey. Sounds like we're on an episode of The Bachelor, but I'm going to say it anyway. Your journey up until this point, you know, what got you interested in copywriting? How did you start down that path and bring you to where you are today?
Cool. Okay. So I've always been one of those people who's not scared by a blank page. So that I grew up helping other people write their own their essays. And I'm pretty sure that I wrote 75% of my sister's dissertation, but maybe don't tell anyone. So writing has always been like pretty easy for me. But I never really thought that you could make any money doing it. I think that's fairly common amongst most of the people that I've heard on your podcast. But writing as something more than just a hobby, I guess, kind of started when I was 31. And I think I'm 39 now, I think. Something like that.
Lose track, yeah.
Who knows? So when I was 31, I was widowed with a two-year-old boy, rather unexpectedly. So my husband, who was incredibly fit and healthy, got diagnosed with stomach cancer and then 3 months later died. It was a bit of a roller coaster ride. It was a bit of a shock to everybody involved. And I was left with a two-year-old boy who didn't really know what was going on, who I had to kind of like sort out. Thankfully, I was a youth worker. And so I knew a lot about child development. I was trained in helping children with bereavement. So that was really useful. Slightly different when it's your own. But having the tools was really, really helpful. And I'm the kind of person who wants something good and positive to come out of every situation, because otherwise I kind of feel it's fairly pointless. And you could sit and mope, but then that doesn't really help anybody. So as part of helping me to deal with the situation, but also as part of turning it into something positive, I started writing a blog. Originally, I was like, I'm going to write a book and it's going to be amazing and it's going to be really helpful to everybody going through this situation. And writing a book's really hard. And writing a blog is much easier because you can just put it out there. You don't have to deal with editors going, this doesn't flow from your previous chapter. and you can't talk about this here because you've already talked about it there. So I started a blog instead. It's called Second Time Around, and you can find it if you're interested, and have a bit of a read about the things that that I went through and the things that I found helpful. It's not huge. It doesn't have a huge amount of traction, but some different people started following it who had businesses. So there's a sleep consultant in the UK, and then somebody who I know who's got a fitness and a sustainable fitness brand. And they both asked me to write blogs for them, from my perspective, kind of to their audience, from the health and fitness idea, and then from like children and sleep kind of thing. And that was my first inkling that like people would pay me to write stuff.
Exciting. Yeah. very exciting.
And yeah, so that was great. So I did a few collaborations with them, and I have I got remarried a few years ago, and I have a 19-month-old daughter now, as well as my 9-year-old son, who's nearly as tall as me. So
they do that. If you keep feeding them, they grow. Yeah,
I need to stop feeding them. Yeah, I should really do that.
Pro tip. Too,
yeah. So I during lockdown in the UK, I was dealing with both of them at home. And the job that I was going to go back to after my daughter was a little bit older, was an exam invigilator. So I was in charge of the exams at a secondary school, to making sure that they all run smoothly and there are enough like people wandering around, making sure nobody's cheating, all that kind of thing. But in the UK, we stopped exams because of lockdown. And I kind of realized, well, that this is going to work, but I am going to have to find something else that that I can do to make some money. So I must have been Googling, because then Google heard my call and threw one of your adverts up at me.
Spoke it out into the universe and it started popping up everywhere. Yeah.
So it was September 2020. And that was when I kind of, discovered that copywriting was an actual job that paid more than the, I think, $15 that I got paid for my first blog when I logged onto Upwork. And I love Upwork. I think there are people on Upwork who want something for nothing, but then I think that's pretty much true of any marketplace. I think that's kind of the way it goes. And you just have to ignore them. And I found some really, really good clients. But yeah, my first blog was 1,000 words on why you should read to your baby, and they paid me $15. So listening to your webinar and going, people will pay me more than $15. That's very exciting. Was really interesting. So the CCA was great, and it kind of gave me loads of tools, and a huge amounts of useful training, and the Facebook group is brilliant. And I'm still on Upwork. But my last client paid me $250 to write an 800-word blog, which is quite like that. Much better.
Much better.
Yeah. And I found some brilliant customers that I've written some websites for, and some email sequences. And I've used all the tips from your pitching masterclasses to pitch quite a lot of local businesses too. So things are going really, really well. But I only have limited time.
Yes. Tell us about that. How limited are we talking? And yeah, what does that look like?
Mm. So thankfully, I mean, it's the summer holidays now where we are. My son goes back to school in 2 weeks, but he was back at the end of the year. So when we're not in lockdown and things are vaguely normal, I have my 19-month-old at home, and my sister-in-law is lovely and comes and looks after her for a day and a half a week, which is great. So I've got kind of consistent time that I know that I can work. But the rest of my working time is basically nap times and in the evenings when the two of them have gone to bed. And sometimes at the weekends. My husband runs his own business, so he works a lot. So it's not always as easy as like he comes home at 5 and then I'm like, right, I'm off to the office. It has to be a little bit more fluid than that.
And I imagine you want to spend time with him as well, which is another element.
Of... Nice. Yeah.
Who's that guy
kind
in the kitchen?
The idea when I got married. It's passing in the night. Yeah, so it's nice to spend time with him too. And he'll be listening, so he'll like that bit as well. So yeah, so it has to be pretty organized. And I've listened to a lot of podcasts and I've listened to a lot of time management books, and they're great for a certain like set of people. But a lot of the tips that they kind of talk about, like getting up an hour before everybody else in the household gets up, or having a specific place where you can shut yourself away and work, or a specific time where you know you're always working. And also things like, and I know this is, it's really important to work out when you work best during the day and then, or when you're most productive and to do like your most creative tasks then. And that's a brilliant tip.
If possible.
Yeah. So I don't really have that luxury. Creatively, I am best like probably between about, I don't know, 9 in the morning and lunchtime. That's my best. Like if you put me in front of a laptop, then I could write you the most amazing things and they would flow from my keyboard like magical unicorns. But Erica, who's my daughter, doesn't nap until about 11:30. So that's kind of my window gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how do you approach then these very important and I'm sure adorable limitations on your time? How do you carve out that time?
Yeah, they are mostly adorable. So I have things that I have to remind myself constantly. Because it's as much a mindset thing as it is a time management thing, I think. Because there's a lot of mum guilt that goes with working generally, and working from home, there's a little bit more because they're always there. So the first thing that I have to do is be realistic with myself. Like I only have a certain amount of time to get my work done, and that's fine because I can get it done in that time. I'm fairly speedy and efficient, but there are things that I can't do. So Facebook groups like the CCA are brilliant. I love them. They're really helpful if you've got questions and things. And there are so many resources, but I can't engage with them all as much as I would like to. Mm-hmm. So like, I would love to go through and give fabulous copywriters feedback on all their action sheets and things. And I feel really, really guilty that I don't have the time, but I don't have time. And there are other Facebook groups that I belong to, and they put on free trainings and webinars and things, and there are hot seats, and there are coaching calls, and there are live, such fabulous things which would be so useful, but I can't do them. And that has to be okay. And one day in the future, when I get to send the adorable distractions off to school, both of them at the same time, then I can do things like that. And that's great. But up until then, it has to be okay that I'm not as much a part of the community, and I don't network as much as I would like to. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that I'm like a second-class online citizen. It just means that at the moment, My focus is fitting in the client work that I need to do. And everything else is kind of is a bit less important. So being realistic about what time I have and what I choose to do with that time is probably the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I think that the busier you are, the more guilt there is that you're not spending time on all of it. You're not spending enough time with your husband. You're not spending enough time with your kids. You're not spending enough time on your job. You're not spending enough time. I need to call my mother, all that kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah. So when that starts to bubble up for you, what do you tell yourself? What are the words that pop into your head?
So that's when being a youth worker is really helpful.
I bet.
Because I tell myself what I would tell like a young person that I used to work with. When I was at school, I had friends, but like I wasn't popular, which is fine. And so I have this niggling thing in the back of my head that if there's a community that I can be part of, then I have to go all in, because then I'll be like, I will feel like I'm part of that community. I will feel like I'm important. And I feel like I have a role. And that will make me feel more confident and a better person. So I tell myself that actually that's rubbish. Because I'm not a better person if I am a more vocal or involved member of a Facebook group. Like that's me pretending that I'm a teenager again who's trying to be part of the in crowd. Like it has no relation on the kind of person that I am and the kind of copywriter that I am. Not in a horrible kind of like disregarding way. It's a fabulous community and they're wonderful people. But that's me deciding that my worth lies somewhere that it doesn't.
Mm-hmm. I love that. It's not the number of likes or comments you get on something, which I feel like is very easy to fall into that with the social media, how it's been built.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and that comparison, you know, and in the group, we encourage people to be as supportive as possible and to give feedback, but I know that it can be tempting to, especially on days when we're feeling a little bit lower, to go into whether it's our group or other groups, or just looking at the web in general, looking at social media and comparing yourself to other people. Well, these people are doing this and I'm not, and all that kind of thing. Does comparison pop up for you? And if so, how do you deal with it?
The fact that there are a mix of people on Facebook groups like that is really helpful. So they're not all students who have loads of time and can go through 25 hours of video training in a week. And
don't do that, anyone.
Yeah, really, it's a bad idea.
That's a terrible idea. Yeah. Don't do that. Not how you learn. But there are also people who have full-time jobs and then they are doing, and then copywriting is something that they're doing in the evenings or at weekends. So having that balance is helpful. But I think that what I used to, and still do occasionally, have problems with comparison-wise, is how fast other people's careers are moving. And how big the projects are that they're getting, and how they go from joining or starting training or starting being a copywriter to suddenly working with major companies or writing huge websites or things like that. Because I'm a little bit of a perfectionist. I'm a list ticker. I want to do really well in things. I'm really bad at being rubbish at things. Like I can't I want to be really good at something straight away, otherwise I'm less interested. so to have to take things slower because I don't have the time is sometimes quite hard. I have to keep telling myself that mainly that there is enough work out there for everybody, because I think that's where it comes from, that comparison and that worry. You see people go from your perspective, you see them go from 0 to 60 in like 5 minutes, and you think that means that work is gone, and I need to catch up, otherwise there's not going to be anything for me to do. But that's not true, because there's so much work out there. It's ridiculous. You've just got to look in the right places for it. So, mm-hmm. And that's something that you mentioned frequently in your training and on your podcast, is that you're not fighting each other for work, because there is lots. So someone else's success is not your failure. It's just more success, which has got to be a good thing, surely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It's proof that just more proof upon proof upon proof that it's possible. And I love that you're not fighting them. It's someone else's success is not your failure. I think that's a really great way to look at it, because it's always tempting. And you know, I think it's part of the human condition to see how we stack up against other people. And for some reason, we always choose the ways that we're not failing, but that we don't, you know, we're never like, well, I'm better than everybody, but that probably wouldn't be healthy either. No.
Find that middle ground. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Definitely. But yeah, so that's quite helpful. I think they're not comparing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I like what you were saying too about just the different groups. It's so easy, I think, to spread ourselves so very, very thin. Mm-hmm. So how do you decide to, when you're going to show up, whether it's in a group or for your family, to be in that moment and to show up, I feel like, wholeheartedly versus like, you know, half your brain's on a client project, half your brain's thinking about your kids and needing to, you know, get them off to school or whatever it might be. How do you balance, I guess, all of the competing things for the things that are competing for your attention? And when you're, you know, listening to a podcast or working on client work, that you're fully there.
Cool. Yeah. So, I mean, podcasts and audiobooks are a massive time management tip for me, because I can do them when I'm on the school run, or when I'm cooking dinner, or folding the laundry, or doing the laundry, or ironing the laundry, or there's just so much laundry.
It never ends.
I said, there are people in my house that I've never met, because they must be putting laundry in my basket, because there's no way. Yeah, there's absolutely no way that we make this much washing. Anyway, that's beside the point.
I feel like that's entirely the point.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a large part of
massive, massive life commitments, and then on top of that, building a business and finding a way to take in all the information that's out there in the world. Yeah,
yeah. So I think partly it's communication. I think I have to communicate with my clients and be realistic about with them about the time that I have and about what my turnaround times are. Especially at the beginning of my business, it was really, really tempting to just say, yeah, sure, I can get that to you tomorrow. There's no problem. But I can't, because I've got all these things. So now I have to tell my husband that you have to cook dinner and I can't put the children to bed, because I've just told my client that I have to write 800 words in 12 hours. So being really like communicative with my clients about how long things are going to take, and being okay with that, because actually they don't care what else you're doing. I could be working on copy for 4 or 5 other clients rather than bathing my baby. Not that it takes that long. or going to watch a match at my son's school, or doing a homework with him, or anything like that. It doesn't matter. It doesn't mean that I'm phoning it in. It just means that this is at the moment with my workload, even if that workload isn't all client work, this is how long something is going to take me. And I've been really lucky that I've had clients who have been really reasonable about that. And the one or two that haven't been, we haven't really lasted very long together. and that's fine. Like, if people want things really, really fast, then, I mean, firstly, I'm not entirely sure that they can expect you to do a decent job of them. but also that's not the way I can work. So, and that's fine. So being communicative with my clients, being communicative with my husband as well. and being realistic with him. So there is a huge amount of guilt for not being there 100% all the time, and not doing every single bedtime story and not doing every single school pickup or I don't know, sports game or whatever. But actually that's fine, because he's very lucky that he has two parents who can split the load, and we are partners. And that was always the deal. I think probably coming from a place where I'd been a mum by myself for a while, before I met my second husband. Second husband makes me sound like I should be downing glasses of Chardonnay and red lipstick and hairspray.
I mean, you can if you want to. I don't see anything wrong with that, frankly.
I'm more of a Malbec fan myself, but there we go. but yeah, so when I met him, I was used to being independent, and it took us a while to kind of to work out how to be that partnership. So that's a hard one thing, but it's now something that we're comfortable with. So I can say to him, like, this is what I need to work this week. And he can say to me, well, this is what I need to work this week. So we're going to have to work that out, because that might not. And we're both very good at compromising. Mm-hmm. So yeah, communication is a massive thing. But the other thing is realizing when you don't have to be there 100%. So like if I'm driving to pick up my son from school and my daughter's in the back, she's 19 months old. She doesn't care if I'm not talking to her the whole entire way. I'm pointing at cows and airplanes and tractors, mostly because she's too short to see most of them out the window anyway. So it doesn't really matter. That's more for my benefit. That's not hers. So as long as she's happy and safe, I can listen to a podcast. And I can switch on a voice recorder on my phone, and I can vocally write copy or kind of note down ideas as I'm going along. I can do those things, because in those moments multitasking is all right. Whereas if I'm doing it while I'm like trying to read a bedtime story, then that's like probably not the best idea in the world.
It's very difficult. Yeah. It's
very impressive.
Also that. Yeah. or if we're sat at the dinner table and I'm trying to answer emails, then actually that's a moment when I would rather choose to be there and then not feel guilty about the moments where mm-hmm. where I'm not, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. It absolutely does. Yeah. Yeah. And there's one thing that you said that I want to make sure everybody really takes home when you were talking about when you and your client were negotiating when you can get work done, and they don't know what happens with the rest of your schedule. They don't know if you're working with a ton of clients, or they don't know if you're at, you know, you're feeding the kids or whatever. And I think it's really important that everyone remember that it's not the quantity of your work that equals your professionalism or your level of skill or anything like that. You know, you can be a professional, skilled, thriving copywriter, and be working with one or two clients at a time. It's not the quantity, and quite frankly, too, speed. Speed of writing, yes, but also speed of ramping up from when you get started to landing your first clients and then landing more and more and more. That none of that equates to being a more, quote unquote, more professional copywriter. It's they don't, there's nothing about those two that has any kind of relation, really. And I just wanted to, you mentioned that, I thought it was a great point. I just want to make sure that everybody really caught that, because I think there is that struggle too of people who are, because we have a lot of students who are working a full-time job and then starting their copywriting business in the evening. And there is that element of, well, I mean, you know, I just got started, therefore I'm not a professional, or I only have one client now, so I'm not a professional. And it's a very effective way for our brains to make us feel bad and try to hold us back from taking action and building our business.
And that was one of the things that that hit me most when I got into that, before I got in touch with you, that sparked a bit of a ranty blog post that I put on my own blog. I was doing some training, it's like some free training from another copy institute that we shall not speak of. and one of the, it was like this kind of like 10-day, 14-day bootcamp thing for getting started and being a professional copywriter. And some of it was great, but there was this one, day that was focused on your workspace. And I think one of the sentences was basically, if you don't have somewhere that you can go to and shut the door, and that is your dedicated workspace, then you're not taking this seriously. As opposed to, you know, like writing from your kitchen table or from your bedroom or anywhere else. And I think it hit me because I kind of thought that we were past that as a society, especially with the last year and a bit. Like the way that everybody works is so different now, and it has been becoming more and more different for a long time. I kind of feel like we should be in a place where there should be different ways of doing things that are all okay. Like you should be able to sit at your kitchen table, work for 2 hours, then clear away your laptop and then serve dinner. Or you should be able to sit out in a park whilst your dog is playing with a ball, and you can type for a bit, and then you can go back and do something else. It just feels really narrow-minded that the only way that you could possibly be taken seriously as a professional is if you can compartmentalize your life in such a way that the different areas never meet each other, because then you're just playing.
Yeah, and I think it's a very privileged perspective.
Yeah,
I don't know a lot of people who, if they have not been working from home, who have a dedicated office space where they can close the door. I mean, I know a lot of people who, like, the only place where they can go to close the door and nobody's around is the bathroom.
Closet. Yeah.
Or the closet, or maybe they have a closet where they can.
My children follow me in the bathroom too. That doesn't really work.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Zoom calls, I will say, but I feel like even to your point, like so much has changed this last year that people are used to kids popping up on a Zoom call, and that's okay. It doesn't make you any less professional. I feel like there's a lot more understanding that life is happening, and it's not going to look like it ever did. Not that it ever looked like that. You know, I feel like we tried to make it look professional and had this definition of what professional means. But I think it's, to Nikki's earlier point, it's not the amount of work, and same with this, it's not necessarily how, yes, you want to present yourself as an expert, but you can do that in a t-shirt and shorts on a call, or, you know, you can do that with a kid on your lap during a call. Mm-hmm. It's the quality of the work at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And I think the more people that are open and honest about the fact that they are balancing these things, and that the different areas of their life do like slam up against each other every now and again, the more that people in similar situations will think, oh, okay, so I can do that. So I can be a copywriter, even though at the moment I have to work in between nap times. Or I can be a copywriter if I can't schedule calls between these hours because I'm caring for my mother who's elderly. And I think unless people are honest about the way that their lives and their working lives are running, you can't, it's cliched, you can't be what you can't see.
Yeah.
But so, and it's the same with clients too. If clients never hear any of their copywriters or any of the employees say, I've got to go and do this, then they won't think that it's completely normal and okay, and you can still hand the work in. I'm working on a website for this stationery company at the moment, and the about page is being a bit tricky, and the client wanted to jump on a call. And the baby was, I would reckon the baby was going to wake up in about 15 minutes. but then the next time I would have had to jump on that call would have been about 4 hours later. So I gave him the choice, and I emailed back and I said, I can jump on a call now, but at some point, and I probably won't be able to tell you when, I will have to leave the call and go and get the baby up from her nap. or we can wait until this time later in the evening. And he was fine with it. And it turned out she slept for a lot longer than she was meant to anyway, which is great. But being open and honest about that, at the same time as still producing really good work, that becomes more and more normalized. Mm-hmm. And then more people have more opportunities.
Yeah. Well, and I think we, in our heads, we think of personal things as having, and I'm not saying you are necessarily thinking of this, but it's a trend to think of personal things as having less value during the business day, when it's still a constraint on your time. To your point, yeah, you had 15 minutes because the baby was going to wake up, but maybe you had 15 minutes because you had another client call coming in. They're all mm-hmm. equally valid constraints on your time, and clients, no matter who your client is, frankly, especially unless you are in their office working for them at 9 to 5, there's no client that has a right to say, I need you on the call right now. They can request it. And if you can accommodate it, great. But we all have constraints on our time that are all equally valid. You having to get the baby up, or we having to go get the baby when she wakes up, and also having another client call or another project. It's all mm-hmm. equally valid. It's all equally valid in our lives. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Excellent. Well, I don't have tiny people, so my time is a little bit less constrained, but I also think that, there was a lot that I took away from this conversation as well. And stuff that's very useful for me too. I definitely want to make sure to ask where people can find you. If people are listening and they're like, oh, I like her style, I want to check out her portfolio, hire her. Where can people find you on the web and on social and all that stuff?
Cool. So my website is wordsbypeter.com.
Love it.
I've just changed over from a WordPress to another one. So, and none of the images copied over, which is obviously hugely helpful. So, so that's my job this week, is to put all the nice stuff back in, but it's, all the information is there. wordsbypeter.com. And that's my copywriting business, Words by Peter. Mm-hmm. And I am all Words by Peter on Instagram, because annoyingly Words by Peter was already taken. And I'm Words by Peter on Facebook. So you can find me on those. If you, at the moment, I've just started my own email list, which is another kind of parenting thing. I don't have time to post daily on social media and engage with all these people to build my followings. I just don't have time to do it. And I tried content planning for a month, and I don't have time to do that either. So, but I do have time to sit down and write a weekly email, because actually that's fun and it's okay. So, that's my new communication thing instead. So at the moment, if you sign up for my list on my website, there's a freebie, which is it's like my brand discovery guide. So it's the questions that I ask brands and clients when I work with them. That's where we start to get an idea of who they are and how they want to talk to their clients. So you can grab that if you'd like. So if you're a copywriter and you're interested, or if you're a business and you have no idea where to get started, then you can use that. Or if you're my mom and you want to check my typos, that's also possible. so that's where I am. Come find me. That would be lovely.
That's true.
We'll link to all of that in the show notes for anyone who's trying to scramble and jot it down.
Oh, yeah.
The show description or show notes. And
just go over to the notes. There. Yeah. So then really just to one final question, just to wrap up, if someone is listening and they've mm-hmm. been considering getting into copywriting, but they have family obligations, they have children, they have spouses, probably generally just one.
Well,
mostly illegal to have more than one. But no judgment, you know, whatever floats your boat. But if they're looking at their lives and thinking, this is something I want to do, but I'm not sure I can make it work, what advice would you give them, or what would you have them consider?
I think that if you like writing, then there are ways to make it work. And I think that as a if you have caring responsibilities of any kind that are a major part of your life, then I think not only do you have, I would imagine, really good time management skills anyway, because you have to balance all those different things. But also caring responsibilities of those kind give you, I think, an added superpower. You are better at getting to the heart of what people are actually saying, because you're better at listening and you're better at paying attention, because you've had to do that and you've had to read between the lines for those people that you have those caring responsibilities for. And that is a, that's a mega skill as a copywriter. I think it's probably even more important than being able to write stuff. Being able to work out what people are actually trying to say to you, and to help them communicate it properly. Then yeah, you should use it.
Yeah, actually, just very quickly, you make a very great point, which I think a lot of parents discount, how persuasive they have to be on a regular basis. If you are trying to get your child to eat the Brussels sprouts three more bites, you are not saying, well, you have to eat the Brussels sprouts because I want you to. It's okay, well, three bites and you get a treat. Three, okay, two more bites. Do you want a treat? Do you want to watch the second half of Moana after dinner or whatever? Parents, and it's obviously not just dinner, but I think parents are, and caregivers in general, are very good at identifying what is going to get someone to do what they want to do, especially with small children. There's a whole lot of negotiation and persuasion, and it's all for the greater good. But I think parents forget that and tend to discount how much they have to do that on a regular basis.
Yeah. I think, yeah, that's it. And the different ways that you have to find to explain like the one thing. You have a very, very logical son. And yeah, I will have to come at it from like four different directions before he will do the thing that I want him to do. Which is a lot like sending a client four different ideas for a homepage.
Yeah, it's A/B testing parenting. Yeah.
I love that.
That's fantastic. Well, Peta, this has been a really fun conversation and a very useful conversation. I know a lot of people who are listening or watching are getting a ton out of it. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It was fun.
So there you have it. We will catch you guys in the next episode. Bye, everybody.
Thanks so much for joining us on the Build Your Copywriting Business podcast. If you liked what you heard, I'd really appreciate it if you could take a minute or two to leave us a 5-star review. I read each one and they mean the world to me and our team. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. And if you want to keep learning, follow us at Filthy Rich Writer across social media and on the site. And of course, if your interest is piqued and you think copywriting might be right for you, check out our free on-demand video training at www.freecopywritingtraining.com. Talk to you next time.